Okay, think about this. A big company, right? From one country, invests like billions somewhere else.
Yeah.
Maybe building a huge factory or, an energy project.
Happens all the time. Vital for the global economy.
Absolutely. But what happens when it goes sideways? Like a government changes the rules overnight, or the investor feels like, hey, you're not treating my investment fairly.
Yeah, that's where it gets tricky. These aren't small disputes. We're talking high stakes, really complex situations.
Exactly. You need a neutral ground, right? A way to sort it out that isn't just the local courts of the country involved.
And that's pretty much the core idea behind investor-state dispute settlement, ISDS.
ISDS, got it. It's
Now,
supposed to offer that level playing field.
precisely, a neutral venue outside the host state system where investors can bring a claim if they think the state broke promises made in an investment treaty.
And these cases can involve just massive amounts of money and tangled legal political issues too, I imagine.
Oh, definitely. Which brings us neatly to what we're digging into today.
Right. We've got this really interesting report, came out just last month, May 2025. It's from the SEC Arbitration Institute in Stockholm. And the title itself is kind of telling: Arbitrating for Peace.
Interesting title. Gives a sense of their perspective.
Yeah, and it's giving us a fresh look and updated view on the SEC's role, specifically in this whole ISDS picture.
So our mission for this deep dive is basically to unpack that report, pull out the key takeaways.
Yeah, understand where the SEC, that's the Stockholm Chamber of Commerce Arbitration Institute, fits in globally.
Right. How significant are they in resolving these big investment fights? And maybe tackle some common ideas or myths about ISDS using the data they present.
In this report, it wasn't superficial. They really went through like hundreds of international investment agreements,
The IAs.
mostly those bilateral investment treaties, BITs, government to government
And
ones.
also the bigger multilateral agreements, like the Energy Charter Treaty.
Exactly. Any treaty that mentions the SEC or Stockholm as a place to resolve disputes, it's a pretty unique window into that world.
So maybe we should start with the basics again, just quickly. ISDS providing that neutral path. Why is it even needed?
Well, I guess investing overseas is inherently risky, isn't it?
It is. And investors, understandably, want some assurance. They want to know that if a state, say, expropriates their factory without proper compensation or treats them unfairly compared to local companies.
Violating the treaty terms.
Exactly, violating the treaty. They want recourse, somewhere impartial. Not just relying on the courts of the state they're having the dispute with, which, might be seen as biased.
And these treaties, the IIAs, the BBITs, the ECT, all that stuff, they're the foundation.
Absolutely fundamental. They lay down the rules, the protection standards a state promises to foreign investors.
And crucially, they contain the consent, the state's agreement to let investors bring claims directly to international arbitration.
Yes, and often specifying which arbitration centers can be used, like the SEC.
And the SEC specifically, it seems like it's built up quite a reputation in this field.
It really has. It's frequently named in these treaties. And it's not just a recent thing.
No.
No, it has this deep history. It kind of positioned itself early on as like a bridge, a place for resolving disputes between different economic systems, East and West.
Ah, like during the Cold War.
Exactly. Think about agreements like the 1977 U.S.-Soviet Optional Arbitration Clause,
Right.
or cooperation with China starting way back in 1984. They designated the SEC, seen as trusted, neutral.
Wow. So that legacy kind of carries through to today.
It does, and you see it in the numbers. The report says the SEC has registered 129 ISDS cases in total since 1993.
Okay, 129.
But what's really striking is that over 50 of those, a big chunk came in just the last 10
But
years.
still very much an active area for them.
Very active, and they're clearly committed. They've taken steps. So like back in 2017, they updated their arbitration rules. They added specific bits relevant for ISDS cases, things like allowing submissions from third parties or from other states signed up to the treaty who aren't directly involved in the dispute. And they're also involved in the wider conversation about ISDS reform. They sit in as an observer at the UNCITROL Working Group 3 meetings.
So they're engaged, adapting.
Definitely seems that way.
Okay, that sets the stage for the SEC's role. Now, let's get into the specifics from the report. Where do the SEC or Stockholm actually pop up in these treaties today?
Right, so the report zeroed in on the active treaties. As of March 2025, they identified 96 active IIAs that mention the SEC or Stockholm.
Out of a much larger pool, historically, I guess.
Yeah, the UNCTAD database shows 288 mentioning them since 1965, but many aren't in force anymore. And a key finding here is that the number of active treaties naming the SCC Stockholm has actually gone down.
Gone down. Why?
Well, the biggest single factor, and this reflects a wider global discussion, is the fallout from the EU's ACMIA judgment. That was back in 2018.
Right. I remember hearing about ACMIA. Remind me, what was the core issue there?
Sure. The European Court of Justice basically said that arbitration clauses within bilateral amendment treaties between two EU member states were incompatible with EU law.
Ah, so intra-EU BITs were the problem.
Exactly. And the practical result was the termination of 31 intra-EU BITs between 2019 and 2022 that specifically named the SCC.
Wow, 31 treaties gone just like that.
Yeah. It removed a significant block of treaties that previously pointed to the SCC. And, you know, this sort of aligns with a broader, maybe more cautious mood globally regarding free trade agreements and ISDS mechanisms compared to, say, 20 years ago.
Interesting context. So let's look at the 96 active treaties that do still mention the SCC or Stockholm. How did they do it? The report broke it down, didn't it?
It did, into four main ways they appear in the treaty language.
Okay, what's the first?
First is alternative. This is pretty straightforward. The treaty gives the parties a choice. You can use the SCC, but maybe ICSED or another institution is also listed as an option.
Okay, a menu approach. How common is that?
That's in 34 treaties, so about 36% of the active ones.
Right. What's next?
Then you have supportive. Here, the SCC might not run the whole arbitration, but it plays a specific role. Most often, this means acting as the appointing authority.
Meaning they step in to pick the arbitrators if the parties can't agree?
Exactly. This is actually the most common type of reference found in 44 treaties, which is about 46%.
Okay, so more common than being just one alternative. Interesting. Third type.
Third is ad hoc or SCC. In these treaties, the parties have a choice again, but it's between setting up their own ad hoc arbitration, maybe using standard rules like the UNCCIDO rules, or choosing to have the SCC administer the whole case under its own rules. This choice appears in 13 treaties, around 14%.
Gotcha. And the last one?
The last one is alternative seat. This is just about geography. Stockholm is listed as one possible location, one potential seat for the arbitration.
Even if the SEC isn't the body running the case.
Right. The seat is important for legal reasons, like which courts oversee the arbitration. Stockholm as a potential seat is mentioned in 15 treaties, about 16%.
And I think you noted the percentages add up to more than 100.
Yeah. Good point. That's just because a single treaty might, for instance, list the SEC as an alternative and list Stockholm as an alternative seat. Multiple references are possible.
Okay. What about patterns? Did the report find any interesting differences in how these references are used?
Yes. One thing stood out. While supportive, the appointing authority role is most common overall.
Right. 46%.
There's a difference between treaties connecting different continents, intercontinental, and those within the same continent, intracontinental.
Oh.
The supportive role is much more frequent in intercontinental BITs, suggests maybe parties from very different legal systems value having a neutral body like the SEC help appoint arbitrators.
Makes sense. What about the intercontinental ones?
There, the ad hoc or SEC choice is significantly more common, maybe suggesting a regional preference for either more party control with ad hoc or using a familiar regional institution like the SEC.
That's a really nuanced finding. It's not just that they mention the SEC, but how and why it might differ.
Exactly. And speaking of differences, the report also looked at the legal systems of the countries involved in these 96 treaties.
What did that show? Is it mostly European civil law countries using the SEC?
Well, there's definitely a strong civil law connection, which makes sense given Stockholm's location. About two-thirds of the treaties involve civil law jurisdictions.
Okay.
But importantly, it's much broader than that. Nearly a quarter involve common law systems or hybrid systems with common law influence.
Right.
And quite significantly, 20% involve hybrid jurisdictions influenced by Islamic law, mainly from the Middle East and North Africa. There's even one treaty involving Iran, noted as a pure Islamic law jurisdiction.
So the trust in the SEC isn't confined to one legal tradition, then?
Absolutely not. The report emphasizes this. They found 71 different countries have active BITs, referring to the SEC or Stockholm.
71. That's broad.
And the fact that 18 of these treaties involve states from non-civil law traditions really underlines that its reputation as a neutral, effective forum crosses legal boundaries.
Mm.
It demonstrates real global reach.
So who are the countries using it most often in their BITs? Does the report name names?
It does. Looking at the frequency of designation, the top users are the BLEU, that's the Belgium-Luxembourg Economic Union. They're party to 17 treaties referencing SEC Stockholm.
Okay, BLEU first. Who else?
Then comes Russia with 15, followed closely by Italy and China, both with 12 active treaties.
Interesting mix. Russia and China in there.
Yeah, and the report also specifically highlights a growing number of references and treaties involving the MENA region, Middle East, and North Africa. Kuwait has 8, the UAE has 7, Algeria and Egypt both have 5.
So a noticeable presence there, too.
Definitely. And this ties back to the intercontinental point. The report states that most of these active BITs, 62% of them, are actually intercontinental.
Connecting different parts of the world.
Right. It really reinforces that historical bridging role.
Yeah.
Especially strong links noted between Europe and Asia, 28 BITs connecting those regions, often involving China and Russia, but also Nordic countries linking eastwards.
And you mentioned earlier that the SEC is adapting to challenges like ACMEA.
Yes, the report points to their October 2024 policy as an example. For intra-EU investment cases under SEC rules, if the parties can't agree on a seat,
the SEC board can decide.
Yes, and crucially, they can decide to place the seat outside the EU.
Why would they do that?
The stated reason is to enhance the prospects of the final award being enforceable, given the legal hurdles within the EU highlighted by ACMEA and related cases. It's a pragmatic move to navigate a tricky legal environment.
Right, shows they're thinking practically about making arbitration work. Okay, so we've talked treaties. Let's shift to the actual cases. The disputes the SEC handles. You said 129 total ISDS cases since 93.
That's the headline number, yeah. With 3 still pending as of May 2025 when the report came out.
And in most of those, the SEC runs the whole show.
In the clear majority, yes. 73% of the cases, that's 94 cases, the SEC acted as the administering institution, handling everything from filing to the final award.
And the other cases.
In about 17% or 22 cases, their role was narrower, mainly acting as that appointing authority we talked about, helping select the tribunal.
Okay. And what are these cases usually based on? What gives the investor the right to bring the claim to the SEC?
The most common basis in 60% of the cases is a bilateral investment treaty, a BIT.
Makes sense.
The Energy Charter Treaty, the ECT, is another significant source. But interestingly, individual investment agreements are also used.
Meaning a specific contract between the investor and the state.
Exactly. A contract that happens to include an arbitration clause pointing to the SEC. And when the SEC does administer the case, most of the time, 71% is done under their own SEC arbitration rules.
Mm.
Other cases might use UNC out-of-prowl rules or be purely ad hoc.
Now, the SEC put out a similar report back in 2017, right? How does this new data compare? They've had 37 new cases since then.
Right. Well, the basics are pretty consistent. The split between administering cases versus just appointing arbitrators is similar, and the SEC rules are still the most commonly used.
I sense a but coming.
But here's a really interesting development the report highlights, and it speaks to that adaptability again.
Okay.
While BITs are still the main source, the report notes a noticeable increase in the share of disputes being referred to the SEC through those individual investment agreements.
The specific contracts, not the general treaties.
Exactly. Compared to the data they had in 2017, this seems to be a growing trend.
Why do you think that's happening? What's the significance?
Well, it could suggest that as the traditional treaty landscape faces challenges, you know, the ACMEA issue terminating intra-EU BITs, ongoing debates about countries leaving the ECT.
Right.
Investors and states might be looking for other reliable ways to ensure access to neutral arbitration. So they build it directly into their specific project contracts.
Like a bespoke solution when the off-the-shelf treaty option is less certain?
Kind of, yeah. It shows the system finding new pathways, perhaps. The SEC remains the chosen neutral forum, but the legal instrument bringing the parties there is shifting slightly.
Fascinating. And the amounts involved, are they going up?
Seems so, slightly. The report crunched the numbers for cases administered since the 2017 report, based on about 7 billion euros in total claimed across those cases.
Okay.
The average amount in dispute works out to roughly 358 million euros per case.
358 million euros on average. Wow, how does that compare to before?
It's a bit higher than the average reported in 2017, which was around 332 million euros. So yeah, these are consistently very high value disputes.
Absolutely enormous sums. So, putting it all together, what's the overall picture of the SEC's caseload telling us?
I think the main takeaway is resilience. Despite those headwinds, we keep mentioning ACMEA, ECT withdrawals, other EU court decisions like Comstroy.
Right.
The SEC continues to see a steady stream of these major ISDS cases. The report suggests this resilience is supported partly by growth in cases based on extra EU BITs, treaties between an EU country and a non-EU country, and significantly by that uptick in cases coming from individual investment agreements.
So the conclusion is that the SEC is still a major player.
Very much so. The analysis confirms it remains a leading, important, and adaptable forum for ISDS globally.
Okay, let's pivot to a topic that always seems to generate heat around ISDS. This idea or claim that the system is inherently biased towards investors.
Ah, yes, the pro-investor bias argument. It's a common criticism.
Now, the SEC itself has confidentiality rules, so they can't just publish all the details of every case outcome.
Correct. So for this part of the analysis, the report did something clever. It turned to publicly available data, specifically the data collected by UNCTAD, the UN Conference on Trade and Development, in their Investment Dispute Settlement Navigator database.
Okay, using public UNCTAD data, what did they find there related to SEC cases?
They identified 56 publicly listed disputes in the UNCTAD database that were connected to IIAs administered by the SEC.
56 public cases. What were they based on? Still mostly beep tests.
Interestingly, in this public sample, it was an exact 50-50 split. Half the cases, 28, arose under the Energy Charter Treaty.
Okay.
And the other half, 28 cases, came from various bilateral investment treaties. That's actually a slightly different ratio than the SEC's overall internal caseload, where BITs formed a larger proportion, remember?
Right, 60% overall internally. So the public data leans a bit more towards ECT. Any specific examples jumping out from this public data?
Yeah, the report mentions quite a few ECT cases brought against Spain, 9 of them, many linked to Spain's changes in renewable energy policies.
Ah, the solar cases. Heard about those.
Exactly. Ukraine, Poland, and Italy also appear as frequent respondent states in these publicly listed ECT cases administered by the SEC.
Then on the BIT side?
There were 6 cases noted under the Moldova-Russia BIT, all brought against Moldova. And also examples like UK investors using the Czechia-UK BIT or the Russia-UK BIT for claims.
Okay. And it also noted some of these treaties aren't even active anymore.
Right. 12 of the disputes in this public data set were brought under BITs that have since been terminated or are no longer in force.
All right. Now for the million-dollar question, or maybe the 350 million euro question, what does this public UNCTAD data say about who wins and who loses in SEC-administered cases? Does it feed the pro-investor bias narrative?
This is probably one of the most crucial insights from the report, addressing that criticism head-on using public data. They looked at the outcomes for 50 concluded cases administered by the SEC that were publicly listed on UNCTAD.
50 concluded cases. What's the breakdown?
Okay. Based only on this specific public UNCTAD data set for SEC cases, the report found the following. States the respondent governments received a favorable decision in 27 out of the 50 cases.
Okay. 27 for the states. That's 54%. What does favorable decision mean here?
It means the tribunal found against the investor, either dismissing the case entirely, maybe on jurisdiction, or finding the state wasn't liable on the merits.
Got it. So over half the time, the state won. What about the investors?
Investors got a successful outcome, meaning they received an award of damages or other relief in 17 cases. That's 35%.
35%. Considerably less than the state's success rate in the sample.
Correct. And the remaining cases. 2 were settled between the parties and 4 were discontinued for other reasons.
So the bottom line from this specific public data sample.
The bottom line, based on the publicly available UNCTAD data for these 50 concluded SEC-administered cases, is that states were actually more likely to get a favorable outcome from the tribunal than investors were.
That directly pushes back against the simple narrative of automatic pro-investor bias, doesn't it? At least for this set of SEC cases.
It certainly provides a concrete data point that challenges that perception based on what's publicly known about these specific cases. It adds important nuance to the debate.
Absolutely. And who are the most frequent respondent states in this public data? You mentioned Spain.
Yes, Spain topped the list with 9 publicly listed cases against it, then Moldova with 8, Poland with 7, Ukraine with 6, and Russia with 5.
And the report mentioned these countries are frequent respondents globally, too.
Yeah. It notes that Spain, Poland, Ukraine, and Russia are also among the most frequent host states listed as respondents in all ISDS cases recorded on UNCTAD, not just the SEC ones. So their appearance here isn't entirely surprising.
Okay, so let's try and wrap this up. We've covered a lot from this SEC Arbitrating for Peace report.
We have. And I think overall, it's a really valuable contribution. It brings a level of transparency using concrete data to the often opaque world of ISDS.
Yeah, and it clearly demonstrates that the SEC and Stockholm as a seat are still very significant, very active players in global investment arbitration.
Definitely. And maybe the key theme that comes through is that resilience and adaptability.
Right. Navigating big challenges like ACMEA, the shifts in treaty policies.
And finding ways to remain relevant, perhaps partly through that increase in cases based on individual investment contracts, not just the big treaties.
And that finding on outcomes from the public data is pretty striking, too.
It is. It offers a specific data-grounded counterpoint within the limits of that public data set to the often heard criticism about inherent pro-investor bias.
So the report really paints a picture of the SEC in Stockholm as, well, trusted, neutral, effective forums chosen by parties from incredibly diverse legal systems and continents.
That's the clear message, yes. Their continued inclusion in so many different types of agreements reflects that global confidence.
Okay, let's leave our listeners with something to chew on. The report mentions a quote from Ulf Frank, a former SEC official, who said, "There is no alternative to arbitration to resolve disputes on the global stage."
A strong statement.
It is. So thinking about that and everything we've discussed, the huge scale of international investment, the geopolitical shifts happening, the challenges ISDS faces, what does the continued evolving role of an institution like the SEC tell you, our listener, about the fundamental need for some kind of neutral ground to resolve these massive investor-state conflicts? Is arbitration really the only game in town for this?
And looking forward, what other challenges does the ISDS system face to maintain its legitimacy and usefulness? How else might it need to adapt and evolve in the years ahead? Something to think about.